Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor LeCaine. In our ongoing search for solutions, today we'll discuss pathways to healing. So many people are dealing with health problems aggravated by the stress and toxins that surround us. It's more important now than ever that we do what we can to keep healthy and to learn ways to heal ourselves. Our guest today is Mira Murphy, who helps people get and stay healthy through the practice of Ayurveda, one of the world's most sophisticated and powerful mind-body health systems. Developed in India, it offers a body of wisdom designed to help people stay vibrant and healthy. Mira studied Ayurveda in India and is a graduate of the Ayurvedic Institute in New Mexico. She's an expert in Ayurvedic medicine and cooking and has created a cookbook, the Seven Centers Ayurveda Cookbook, now in its second edition, based on her years as a chef at a yoga center. Mira is also a skilled yoga teacher. She learned yoga from the great yoga master, Rama Vernon, her mother and my friend, with whom she worked to write one of the essential books on yoga, Yoga, the Practice of Myth and Sacred Geometry. Mira is here with us today to share her knowledge of how to get and stay healthy. Mira Murphy, welcome to All Together Now.
Thank you, Eleanor. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yes, well, I'm eager to share with our listeners what you know about health and healing and good and delicious and nutritious food. So
I'm eager to share.
Yes. Let's start by explaining for our listeners who may not have heard of it, what is Ayurveda?
So Ayurveda is a word, a Sanskrit word, that translates to the science of life. Ayur means life and Veda means science or knowledge. So much like biology is also the science of life. It is a language the ancient peoples, it's considered 5,000 years old, so it's a way of understanding nature, the body, the mind, and health from the perspective of a nature-based science. It's considered, it's from India, and it's parallels with yoga and is a holistic medicine for the mind, body, and spirit.
Wow, that sounds pretty comprehensive. So how can Ayurveda help people be healthy today?
So Ayurveda is based upon having vibrant and radiant health. It's different than preventing disease, but that's a part of it. But it's really about being the most vibrant, healthy person we can be so that we can share the gifts that we're meant to be on earth to share. So it's very simple and basic in its most simplistic form, so that everyone can easily understand it and empower themselves with the knowledge to keep their bodies healthy. So the body is always desiring balance and homeostasis, and Ayurveda is there to kind of help the body, support the body and the mind to find that balance and homeostasis.
Good. So you want to help people bring balance to their body. How do you do it? What are the different methods of treatment in Ayurveda?
Well, Ayurveda is based on the five elements, so earth, air, fire, water, and space, which contains all the elements. So, for instance, we look at balancing through opposites. So if there's an excess of fire element, which has certain qualities of hot and sharp and penetrating, which can manifest as ulcers or bleeding disorders or anger, irritation, then we balance with things, food practices and substances that are cooling and softening and calming to those elements. So for instance, easy example, in the summertime when there's a lot of fire element in the atmosphere and maybe more propensity to being angry and irritable and having rash on the body, then that would be a good time to be drinking cucumber water and taking cilantro and coconut and avocado and lime and things that are going to cool that excess heat.
That sounds great. And have you seen this work now with people? I know you do these individual consultations, but people come to you and they have some discomfort or illness, and then, you know, what happens? You do an analysis of what their elements are. Can you tell what those are?
Yes, yeah. So we do quite a process, quite an intake. It's a two-hour process of questioning, and we in Ayurvedic medicine, we use the pulse. We take pulse, but not just for the rate and rhythm. We actually are listening at seven different levels of the pulse to many different qualities. So it's a very advanced form of pulse taking. We look at the eyes, we look at the tongue, we look at the skin and the lines of the face. All of the body tells us information about what imbalances are occurring. And then through questioning, through seeing what symptoms people are having, what their bowel movements are like, what the urination is like, what they're eating, how their sleep is, even what kind of dreams they're having, all of this we use as information to tell us what is going on at a deeper level in the body. And then we offer recommendations to correct the imbalances. And that can be dietary recommendations, that can be treatments, that can be lifestyle patterns, that can be even herbs, herbal formulas, or treatments. So it depends. It really, Ayurveda is unique because it's very individual medicine. Everyone is born with their own unique individual, what we call constitution, bodily constitution. And so as a practitioner, we're always trying to discover what that person's basic nature is, and then what elements are out of balance in the current time, and how to kind of guide their body and their mind back to its innate state of balance and its innate nature. So so it's all the treatment will come, even if it's the same, even if five different people come with a flu, you're going to treat it five different ways depending on who that person is.
Wow, that is so different than kind of the way Western medicine is looking at the flu. It's like, you got the flu, take this medicine.
Exactly, exactly. That's where it really differs from Western medicine, which, you know, really is about treating disease and managing symptoms. And Western medicine has remarkable discoveries that it's made and remarkable tools of diagnosis, and it is excels in emergency medicine. But in terms of treating chronic disorders and really getting to the root of disease, this is where Ayurveda really excels. In India, they're treating diseases that are considered incurable or untreatable in Western medicine. And actually, many people who have gone the medical route and who have not found help actually come to Ayurveda as a last resort. And then they actually, you know, depending on their circumstance, some may find actually healing through Ayurveda that they couldn't find through Western medicine, because we're really digging into the root cause of disease. That is always the investigative process as an Ayurvedic practitioner, is to uncover the root cause and treat the root cause to reverse the process of pathogenesis.
Uncover the root cause and then treat the root of the pathogenesis. Pathogenesis is what? The illness?
the creation of pathology. Yeah. So how the disease process began and how it progressed. And in Ayurveda, we have a very advanced way of looking at that. There's considered 6 stages of disease, and Western medicine, you know, there are many times you go to the hospital because someone feels like something's wrong, and they'll do all these tests, and they'll send you home and say, there's nothing wrong with you. And people say, well, but I feel that something is wrong with me. And that is because it's not yet at the place that disease has taken manifestation. But there are the first 4 stages before it actually manifests. We can reverse disease much easier than when it's a full-blown disease. But in Ayurveda, in Western medicine, they only recognize disease at the last 2 stages of disease when it's actually manifested and then developed complications, which at that point is a lot harder to reverse. So we have ways of identifying illness before it manifests. So it can be reversed at a much easier stage. So the method of prevention of disease in Ayurvedic medicine is very, that's one of its best assets to humanity. It's very advanced, and it can really help people prevent a disease from occurring.
Wow, that's
impressive.
Day
and age,
yeah.
With healthcare costs and the state of healthcare kind of hanging in the balance, Ayurveda is excellent because it empowers people to take care of their own health before they're into an uncomfortable and costly process of disease. It's the best health insurance we have.
Wow, that's impressive. So have you worked with someone who was kind of at an early stage of an imbalance that if left untreated would have manifested as some kind of a disease?
Yes, most definitely. I've worked with people at all different stages because that's what you have coming to you. But I think the most powerful application that I've worked with Ayurveda is educating people on the basic principles of how to take care of their health to prevent it from getting worse. And we, you know, being that I worked at Seven Centers Yoga Arts, a yoga studio, for 6 years full time, and I still work there occasionally. And the value of that experience for me as a learning in Ayurveda is, in a way, it was like a test lab of Ayurveda, because we have these people that come for 30 days and they completely live Ayurveda. We teach them how to live Ayurvedic lifestyle. I cook them the Ayurvedic food, and they're doing yoga all day long. And it's amazing within 30 days the changes that we would see in people. And I had this one woman comes to mind because she was so compromised in her digestion. This actually is very, very common, that so many people have so many food allergies and digestive problems nowadays because of the way that we're growing our food, the way that it's processed. Many issues are giving people digestive problems like they haven't quite had in past generations. And so we see this so often. And so much of Ayurveda is really about treating digestion, because it's considered most diseases are born out of poor digestion and the digestive tract. So by just working with digestion, you're able to prevent so many things from occurring. And I had one woman who was so thin, and she just really was at a point she wasn't digesting food. And so it was such a painful process for her to eat that she just didn't ever want to eat. She had such a bad relationship with eating food. She came to me at the end of 30 days crying and said, "You've changed my life. Like this, now I have a completely different relationship with the way that I relate to food and eat food. And I feel nourished." And this is the real, another value of Ayurveda is that it's very nourishing, where a lot of, Western medicine and other approaches, even the Western cleansing methods, is kind of about, changing body chemistry or cleansing and reducing. there's a lot in Ayurveda that is also very nourishing. And even though we have diseases of excess, we still have people being very malnourished. They're not getting the right nutrients, or they are, but they're not digesting it. So there's that saying, we are what we eat. But Ayurveda would go one step further and say, we're not exactly what we eat, we are what we digest. So many people can be eating really good food, but if they're not breaking it down properly, it's not actually nourishing their bodies. So many people at the end of this yoga training would have a real true understanding of what nourishment is and what that feels like. So this particular person comes to mind because she really felt the benefit of what it was to be deeply and truly nourished by Ayurveda.
That sounds great. I want you to come and live in my house for 30 days and cook us food so we have all this healthy, nourishing food.
I
that sounds
that a
wonderful.
Lot.
That's great. Well, it's terrific that you're able to help that woman. And, you know, the 30 days where you get the food and then the daily yoga, that all sounds great. What about for people who maybe aren't able to go for a 30-day program, but can you do like a consultation over a Skype or over the phone, or how does that work?
Yes.
I guess you would have to look
yes.
at people, huh?
So I do consultations in person and over the phone, and I have a website, miramurphymedicine.com, which details, again, more about what that involves, and I can do it from remote. As long as I get pictures of the eyes and the tongue and things like that, then I can do the full intake and help people from afar.
Mm-hmm.
So I do that, and I also travel to various places in the country and teach workshops. I'm going to teach a workshop in Tucson, Arizona, at the end of June for women, Ayurveda for women, how to stay healthy as a woman throughout life. And I've done cooking classes in the past, and I travel and I cook for various yoga trainings and retreats.
Oh, wow, that sounds great. So, you know, it's so interesting that we can use or think about food as a vehicle for getting healthy. As you know, and so many of us, the more we hear about what's in our food, you get scared and you don't want to eat anything. I can kind of relate to that woman who was so thin.
Yeah.
She was like, you're just, the more you read, the more scared you get about the chemicals and pesticides that are in our foods, and particularly anything in the processed foods, all the problems with that, the meats and all the chemicals they're feeding to the cows and the chickens for that, and the ocean pollution for the fish. And so it goes on and on. It's just like, how do you find any healthy food to eat?
Yeah.
So it's good that you're focused on the positive side of what people can be eating to help them be vibrant, you know, recover from whatever imbalances they may have and feel that vibrant energy again.
Yes, absolutely. It takes more energy and knowledge these days to stay healthy, where even just one generation ago, it wasn't the case. You know, organic mm-hmm. food was just food. And now we have so much more pollution in our atmosphere that we all are going to have to face more and more as time goes on. Hopefully not, but we all have to address that within ourselves and our families. And, you know, we do our best to find the best quality of food. And in the Ayurvedic kitchen at Seven Centers, we research brands, and we're always trying to find the best possible source. But not everyone has access to that. And even with that, we're still exposed to so many things through the air, through the water. And the best method to address it really is when we have healthy digestion, which in Ayurveda we call Agni, which is our digestive fire, then we're able to break down toxicity in our food and in our environment and we're able to eliminate it properly, when the channels of elimination are properly moving and flowing and open, then all of that can, we can be dealing with the ongoing stress of what we're exposed to much better. So in many people, what I find myself doing is mainly, largely, we're always treating Agni. We're always looking at digestion and elimination and how that, and if that is not working well, that's the first line to address, because that will affect the deeper tissues of our body, and that will also help someone to deal with the ongoing exposure to these, to the pollution.
Oh, that's very impressive. And are there any kinds of foods that are good for people to eat to be healthy, or does that really depend on your particular body type?
It does really depend. It's you know, in Ayurvedic medicine, there's no good food and there's no bad food. In fact, they say this about medicine, too, that everything is medicine, everything is poison. It depends on how you use it, for whom and when, and how much. So I had an Ayurvedic teacher that he would always say his motto was, I love food that's healthy and delicious. You know, so of course, finding the best sources of food that we can, fresh, the fresher the food is, the more life force it will give us. And so I'm often teaching people how to cook even just basic things, because when you have home fresh cooked meals as opposed to canned food or frozen food or boxed food, then you're getting the life force. When you're actually buying vegetables and grains and legumes and meats, you know, as local and fresh as possible, then you're getting so much more life force from the food than food that's been sitting in a can for months. And so that's a crucial piece to both the energy we get from food and also how we digest it. And then also, you know, as a general thing, is eating seasonally. And we've really gotten away from that because we have our food shipped in from all over the world, that many people are very disconnected even from what foods are in season when. And this can be a beautiful way to connect back into nature. And nature provides us with exactly what we need at every season. So if we're eating food seasonally, we're getting fresher food, and we're also balancing the elements in nature. So in the springtime, we have tons of greens available, spinach and lettuces, and these offer like a cleansing from the heavier foods of the winter. The winter is an appropriate time to have more animal protein because there's less fresh vegetables and fruits available naturally. It's a kind of a dormant time in nature. So it's a time to eat more grains and more beans and more meats and dairy products. To replenish kind of the stores of fat and protein and things that our body needs to nourish itself. And then in the springtime is a good time to sort of, cleanse a lot of that. So nature gives us greens and bitter roots and foods to do that. So salad is a great thing to eat in the springtime. And then into the summer we have, you know, cucumbers, we have a large variety of food, and cucumbers, which are cooling, and we have tomatoes, and we have, all kinds of fresh food. And so that's a great time to be eating that and also to go lighter. And then in the fall, we have the root vegetables and squashes, winter squash and things like that. So just being aware of the fruits and vegetables at every season is a really healthy way to approach eating. And this comes a lot from John Dooliard, who has a wonderful website with lots of information, lifespa.com. And he really emphasizes he doesn't even work with normally we look at eating for constitution, for your body type. And so many people approach it this way, which is very individual, but John Doliard really emphasizes the three-season diet and eating seasonally.
Oh, that's interesting. So you can do both. You can think about the what seasonally is available or would normally be available without all the traveling and transport we do now, and also eat right for your body type, which you'd want to get some Ayurvedic practitioner to help you figure out which of your, you know, what's the nature of your body constitution. I also want to talk about, you write in your book about the healing power of spices, which I never really heard much about spices. You know, I guess herbs, you think about the midwives and nurses way back over for really centuries. But you talk about the value of spices for flavor and for medicine. So tell us a little bit, you know, it seems like such a small thing, but what do you mean by the healing power of spices? What is healing, and what would some of the spices that provide healing be?
Yeah, so this is a great question, because this is a knowledge I think many people used to be more connected to, and as every culture has their own folk medicine. I was just spending some time in the Middle East, and, you know, they were telling me there that people there are still very connected to folk medicine so that they can heal very, you know, simple disorders in the kitchen with kitchen medicine with their mother, instead of going to the hospital for every little thing and getting antibiotics. That when you have a cough, you know, you can use some thyme, you can use some cinnamon, you can, you know, put some cinnamon, cardamom, and black pepper and honey, and, you know, eat that, and that will help to kind of the lungs to clear and expectorate.
So wait a minute, you're saying if someone has a cough, you should take cinnamon?
Yeah, cinnamon is a really excellent antibacterial and really good for preventing cold and flu. So when you get that little tickle in the back of your throat, like you're starting to get a cold or a flu, really good to either take really strong cinnamon tea or to put a little in honey and eat it that way, because honey is also really coating to the throat. And cinnamon is also a great blood sugar balancer. So it's really good for diabetics to have cinnamon, on a regular basis. So every spice, you know, we could go through, actually in my book, I go through every spice and I talk about specifically the healing remedies for each and every spice. A couple that I want to highlight that I find are really important is one, ginger. Ginger is an amazing medicine. I consider ginger like one of my deepest loves when it comes to spices. It's like I feel like ginger and I are like an old married couple. Like whenever I, you know, need someone who just got my back, I go right to ginger.
The go-to spice.
Ginger is... Ginger is an amazing tonic for digestion. And so for what we were talking about with like reducing toxicity in the body and encouraging agni, ginger, just taking a slice of fresh ginger before and or after eating is like a really good daily practice, really simple, really easy to do, and excellent. And ginger also helps us to sweat. So it helps us to then detox those pathways of sweating, which is really important. Most people don't know, but we should be sweating on a daily basis. That's a healthy thing to do every day. And
yeah, you know, I don't sweat too much, and I always thought that was a good thing, but now you're saying I should probably kick it up a notch to detox.
Yeah, it's really good. Sweating is one of our ways to eliminate waste from the body. So sometimes ginger is what I offer people to help if they are not, if sweating is more difficult. Ginger helps open that pathway. It's also, even though it's hot, it's fiery, but it's also anti-inflammatory. So it's kind of a little bit magical that way, because mostly you'd say ginger would aggravate what we call pitta dosha, which is fire, and pitta leads to inflammation. But ginger is actually reducing to inflammation. So it's great, makes it wonderful for, like, if you've had an injury and you need to bring circulation, say, to a joint, and also reduce inflammation to reduce pain. Ginger is used as a great anti-inflammatory. And it's also great for pain, for antispasmodic, or for, for women, for menstruation. It also helps to, like, invigorate the flow of blood. So if there's cramping during menstrual time, drinking hot ginger tea before and during menstruation can be a really good practice if it needs to be encouraged. So many, many applications of this one sweet little root, spicy little root.
Yeah. And when you say ginger tea, now do you include, if you go to the store and they have, you know, the prepackaged teas made from ginger, or are you saying, do you think we need to actually go buy the raw ginger root and then scrape some of that into some hot water? What do you think?
Yeah, so the raw ginger root is going to be more potent, more powerful, and yeah, you would just buy the root and then you would just slice it in, like, dime-sized pieces. And then just throw it into boiling water and let it simmer for about 5 or 10 minutes, and then let it sit for 5 minutes, and then drink it like that. And you can add, you can add lemon and honey, or you can just drink it as is. But ginger tea, now, just a word of caution, it can be more heating. So if someone has issues of heat already in the body, or if it's summertime, it's not necessarily appropriate for everyone. So this is where Ayurveda gets, it's hard to make blanket statements about anything in Ayurveda, but for many people, I find ginger to be very safe to use. But also some of our other great digestive allies are cumin, coriander, and fennel, which are classic herbs and spices that we've used in cooking, European kind of cooking. Cumin's amazing because you see cumin show up in Mexican cooking and Middle Eastern cooking, and cumin is just this universal kind of character and kind of get along with everybody. So cumin I use a lot in cooking, and all those spices that I mentioned are amazing because they're cooling, they're digestive, but they're also cooling. So they're appropriate for everybody. There's no one that doesn't benefit from cumin, coriander, and fennel. And these can be, even just like chewing fennel seeds after a meal can be a great digestive and a great way, especially if you're having any sort of indigestion or you've had a heavy meal, chewing on some fennel seeds is a good way to just kind of eliminate any gas or bloating or digestive discomfort.
Oh, my God, this is amazing. Well, I was a little surprised to hear you say that ginger was your love in spice, because in your book you talk about basil as the queen of herbs. Tell us a little bit about basil. I mean, who knew these healing properties? Yeah. Tell us about basil.
Yeah, basil is wonderful. And actually, if you look into the history of it, it's been used to clear evil spirits.
We need someone in Washington, D.C. right now.
What's that?
We need something to clear evil spirits in Washington, D.C. right now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's used to cleanse the atmosphere. And in India, they grow a type of basil that's called holy basil. And so it's a more medicinal strain of basil, but it's still in the basil plant family. And they grow it to help to deal with the pollution, both physical pollution and energetic pollution. So So it's a common practice in India that outside of every home, they have a basil plant growing. It's considered very, very sacred and protective. It protects the home. And so they do offerings to the basil plant, and they honor the basil plant. And then it's used medicinally for almost every condition you can imagine. It's used, it's excellent for the lungs. It's excellent for asthma, for cold and flu. It's excellent for the heart, for cardiovascular disorders, for hypertension. It's used for, blood pressure, for headaches, for cleansing the blood. It's used for allergies, just so many things, and then also the mind. It's very uplifting, and it gives kind of a boost of energy without having caffeine. People are kind of on to the holy basil train, or Tulsi is another name that we use for holy basil. So you'll find a whole, Organic India makes a whole line of Tulsi teas. You'll see rooibos chai Tulsi tea. You'll see peppermint Tulsi tea. You'll see Tulsi rose tea. That's a really nice one. So, and it's really excellent for helping the body to cope with stress, which is a really big factor in today's world, is we need all the help we can get to cope with the stress that people are dealing with in their lives.
Absolutely. So, I'm going to go out and Tulsi's get some basil really, today.
Yeah, absolutely. And just a little interesting side about Tulsi is that they have a project around the Taj Mahal, because the pollution in India is so bad that the air pollution is actually degrading the Taj Mahal. So in order to preserve the Taj Mahal from the effects of pollution, they've planted 1,000 Tulsi plants around the Taj Mahal to purify the air in that area, to actually protect it from the pollution.
Is it working?
Yeah, that's a good question. I heard about the project at its inception, so I will follow up on that and get back to you.
Yeah.
This was years ago that they were enacting the project. So yeah. We'll find out about that. But Tulsi is, as we were talking about, just the toxicity in our environment that we all have to deal with. Tulsi is a really good way for us to kind of, as a tool, to help us to eliminate that toxicity.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Well, let's talk a little bit about specific health issues that maybe some of our listeners are wrestling with, that maybe some of what you know could help them with. So, where have you seen, I know you mentioned the woman who was so thin and had a bad relationship with food, but what are mm-hmm. some of the other things that are, they've already reached maybe the level of expressing itself as a disease. So yeah. Where have you seen the Ayurveda help people deal with a health problem?
Yeah. Well, if we look at the common issues of this country, we have a lot of overweight people and a lot of issues with diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what we would call in Ayurvedic medicine a kapha disorder, meaning that it's imbalance of earth and water in both cases. So, that is largely due to the fact that the typical American diet is, we know this from common sense and also many studies, is that we have issues of fast food, we have issues of oils that are badly processed, fried foods, and carbohydrates and sugar and processed things. So, we can do a lot with eliminating those factors. But also, if we look at the fact that, we don't, if we look at the tastes in our diet. We, in Ayurvedic medicine, a big piece of Ayurvedic cooking, we look at the six tastes, which are sweet, sour, salty, bitter, pungent, which is spicy, and astringent, which is like drying, like tea. Tea is drying or astringent, makes us urinate more. So most of the American diet is sweet and salty. We have an excess of those tastes, which are of the earth and water element. So when that is done in excess, then it leads to things like diabetes and weight gain. What we are very much lacking in the American diet is the bitter taste. The bitter taste is actually very present in other countries where they eat things like bitter melon and bitter greens and different spices that we're not used to in the American diet, like turmeric and cumin and different kinds of olives beyond just black olives, but very bitter types of olives, very bitter types of grains or legumes that we can't find here. So I think this is actually a big issue when we look at our American diet and the disorders that are coming as a result, because the bitter foods, which as I mentioned are like many greens, like dandelion greens are very bitter, kale has some bitter qualities, collard greens, and then spices like fenugreek and cumin and turmeric, all of these things are bitter. This helps to clean the blood, to cleanse the liver, to keep the blood vessels healthy, and we're having a lot of issues with cholesterol and hypertension, and it helps balance the blood sugar, and it helps detox the body. So, and it helps reduce weight. Bitter taste is very, helps promote weight loss. So, when we look at kind of broad strokes of the imbalances that are happening in this country, we can be greatly benefited just by reducing the sweet and the salty amount of food in the diet and increasing bitter food, like the greens.
Wow, that's amazing. So I know weight is a major issue for a lot of people, like virtually every woman I know is trying to lose weight. So you're saying if we can cut back on the sweet and salty foods and increase some of the bitter foods, that could help people lose weight.
Yes. And also, you know, a lot of, especially for women, because you brought up women, a lot of the overweight problems have a lot to do with the endocrine system. And this is going to be a big focus of my weekend workshop in Tucson, is going to be how women balance the endocrine system. And this really goes back to stress, the stress in people's lives and how much, you know, women have, women and men, but women throughout history have always been the ones that have to deal with kind of what's going on in the world and kind of pull the family together. Uh-huh. So this great pressure that's on the women of our world, is really a factor for the endocrine system. And that, in addition to the toxicity that we mentioned in the water, the, you know, think of all the radiation that's in the ocean that comes uh-huh. through the fish, the pesticides, all of these very much disturb the endocrine system. Radiation is very toxic to the thyroid. And the thyroid, so many women are having hypothyroidism post-menopause. This is like rampant. And a lot of this has to do with a common, you know, menopause is considered to be kind of the report card. We learned in Ayurveda school that every month our menstrual cycle is sort of our report card for the month, like how we've been doing kind of shows up in our menstrual cycle. And so it informs us kind of like where the body's at in its balance. Well, menopause is kind of like the report card of the life of all the menstrual years of how you've cared for yourself as a woman. And there's, you know, a lot of energy lost in both menstruation, childbirth, pregnancy, postpartum time, and we are not supported in this society to take that time to actually rebuild those reserves. And women keep working and they keep supporting and taking care of everything. And this reflects in that postmenopausal time when suddenly everything kind of hits. And it hits often in the endocrine system. So when we look at overweight, you know, we can look at, yes, if someone's eating like a high fried food diet with lots of sweets and lots of simple carbohydrates and things like that. But there's a lot of weight gain in people who are eating really good diets. And it's really not related to diet and exercise, but it's related to the state of the endocrine system and the chain reaction between the adrenal glands, which are activated in stress, how that affects the liver, how that affects the pancreas, how that affects the thyroid. The whole endocrine system is all connected. And then many women are on birth control, which affects the hypothalamus, which affects the whole endocrine system. So, you know, it's really challenging in today's world to keep our endocrine system really healthy. But there's a great book for women by Claudia Welsh. She's a wonderful teacher and writer. It's called Balance Your Hormones, Balance Your Life, Balance Your Hormones. And, or maybe it's Balance Your Hormones, Balance Your Life. And it talks about really the innate issues that we're all facing in the endocrine system and how we can align ourselves. Just aligning ourselves back with the cycles of nature is a really powerful way to help our endocrine system find balance.
That's interesting. So are there any particular foods or spices that help the endocrine system?
Well, Tulsi is one that we talked about because it's great for detoxifying the, you know, the toxins and heavy metals from the body. Cilantro, just blending cilantro in water is another good way to detoxify these heavy metals, and it's a heavy metal chelator. So these are two things if you feel like there's needs to be a cleanse of like pollution, radiation, because the glands of the body are what kind of uptake all of that chemical stuff. So as just a chemical kind of detox, these are two really good things to use, as well as turmeric. Turmeric is incredible. Turmeric's like ginger. Well, I didn't get to turmeric, but turmeric is now being studied for being anti-cancer, anti-tumor. It's like incredible. It's anti-inflammatory and it's an antibiotic and it's an incredible detoxer of the body, as well as helping to encourage healthy flora of the gut and be digestive. So turmeric is another like amazing overall panacea for health. So between cilantro, tulsi, and turmeric, that's a really good way to sort of keep the body cleansed of those things to affect the endocrine system. And then just joy. Joy is one of like the biggest factors for reducing stress. And this is actually something I talk to many clients about, is like, you know, we tend to fixate on what we eat or what we take or supplements or this or that, and then we forget how vital it is to just do something every day for pure enjoyment, to find that childlike joy in our life again, that not everything is just about burden and obligation and bills and kids and house and this and that, and but that you go outside and you get fresh air and you get in nature, you take a walk, you know, dance, you know, write, do something creative, do something that is the best way to both cope with stress. And, you know, we have the group of hormones that are stress hormones, and then we have a group of hormones that we refer to as sex hormones, like oxytocin, that's released in orgasm. When we just feel good, you know, and that's just, that can be, we need to rebalance these hormones by actually doing things that are taking a bath, getting a massage, things that are very like enjoyable, bring pleasure, and nourish our spirit and our soul. And that goes a really long way at rebalancing health.
Yeah, I love that. And yeah, so we're drawing on the spices and the herbs, we're drawing on the good foods and the body movement, and we're drawing on have more joy in our life. We just have a couple of minutes left here, and I want to get to some of the underlying principles of Ayurveda, this amazing system that seems to help so many people, you know, get healthy, be healthy, stay healthy. And I saw a description by Dr. Deepak Chopra, who's a well-known author, and he talks about how wonderful Ayurveda is, and he says the two main guiding principles of Ayurveda are, first of all, the mind and the body are inextricably connected, and second of all, nothing has more power to heal and transform the body than the mind. Do you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. And that's why, you know, in Ayurvedic medicine, we call it a mind-body medicine. Because the mind, you know, even what I just mentioned with the stress hormones, and Western medicine will recognize this too, is how many disorders are psychosomatic today. You know, that... you know, more in modern day than ever before, because we have a lot of conveniences and comforts that we didn't used to have. We don't face the same physical challenges as when we were, you know, working in the fields or, you know, living on the land or exposed to things that were actually, you know, maybe poisonous snakes or things that were of more detriment or immediate danger to the body. But what we have now is a high amount of anxiety, depression, and all of this that is going on that is then affecting our physical health. Even if we don't have like a diagnosable bipolar or, you know, clinical depression, we all have our ups and downs. And that's why Ayurveda and yoga go hand in hand. And because as we address the mind, and then we are, it is the subtle aspect of the body. In yoga and Ayurveda, we see that the body is actually material mind. The body is, you know, our cells are all a reflection of our consciousness. So as we really, you know, I don't, physical healing is limited without an understanding of how to treat the mind and how, because mind is present in every single disorder and disease, unless it was like a car accident. But for 99% of cases, we have to address the mind. And that is why yoga is such a powerful sister science, because yoga and Ayurveda both have tools to help us create a strong and healthy mind in order to create a strong and healthy body, and vice versa. You know, also we look at the fact that in Western psychology, these issues are mainly, you know, if it's not drugs, then it's addressed through talk therapy. But what it's missing and lacking is the understanding that we need to clear and clean the body to create a strong and healthy body in order for a strong and healthy mind. So they go hand in hand. My mom, who studied with Iyengar, studied yoga with Iyengar, she says a lot how he always used to say, he would address compression of the spine and people's posture. You know, when people are sitting at the computer or they're sitting in the car or they're just sitting, people are often slouching and they're compressing the anterior part of their spine. And over time, this just you start to lose the space between the vertebra. So in yoga, we're always like we're pushing down through the feet and we're growing up through the crown of the head to put space in the spine between the vertebra, which affects all of the nerve roots which go everywhere in the body. And he would work in this way with people, and people who had depression would suddenly feel like lifted and brighter. And he used to say, I don't know what comes first, compression or depression. So like this, we work with both. We work with the mind and the body because they are so inextricably linked.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, we just have a minute left here, and I'm wondering, what do you see as the future of Ayurveda in the United States? Is this like widespread now, or how many people know about it? What do you see happening?
It's growing. More and more and more people, you know, Dr. Oz has had a number of specials on Ayurveda. Deepak Chopra has made it almost a household word. So I think we're really on the cusp of a boom in Ayurveda. Like where Chinese medicine was and acupuncture was maybe 20, 30 years ago, Ayurveda is on the cutting edge of that kind of a boom. So, you know, it's funny because California is always the place to look for food and health fads. And in every coffee shop now in California, you see golden milk, which is turmeric milk, which is a medicine in Ayurveda used for nourishment and nervous system and inflammation, and it's good before you go to bed. And now it's in every coffee shop. And it's just funny because, you know, and ghee, which is clarified butter. You know, now people are putting ghee in their coffee, and, you know, ghee here and ghee there. So I think it's really definitely going through a boom, which is great, as people are going to need to watch their and prevent disease for their health care. I think it's a really great thing. And then it also, because Ayurveda, you know, how it works in India is Western medicine is used there to treat the more acute diseases and emergency medicine. But when people have more chronic conditions, they go to Ayurveda because it's more effective at treating chronic conditions. So many people, when I was traveling through the East in Asia and talking to people about the future of medicine, time and time again, people said, Western medicine and Ayurveda will come together. Eastern medicine and Western medicine will come together. And if you look at the history of Western medicine, it starts in Greece, which is the ancient Greek medicine was founded from Ayurveda. The Greek medicine had constitutional medicine. They had all the practices of Ayurveda, and they even used the same herbs and spices for the same purposes.
Right.
So if you look back at the history...
We're out of time now, but I did notice a lot of similarities between the Ayurveda and the ancient Greek medicine. So maybe we'll have you back to talk some more about that sometime. But meanwhile, it's Mira Murphy. See her at miramurphymedicine.com. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Eleanor.